The boss will live forever.
What does it mean? What does it mean?
It means, that's right. It means, living forever means he exists through time forever. That's not what it means. It means he's not subject, he's outside the whole realm of time, inherently infinite. It's an abstract thought, but that's the pshat. That's the true pshat in the Shema. At least we have the first word. We'll get through the other words too, maybe. Yes? Go ahead. Tira Gadol, the Rambam says. The only way we can know it is after thinking about it for a long time. Okay, the Hanoah of the Nefesh. What I want to mention today is something which will not really tell you what the Chakir Gadol is in the Rambam, but it will give you a little bit of insight into the Nefesh itself. Okay? A little bit of insight into the Nefesh. So what I'm saying is really something which is very basic, but it doesn't really fathom what the Rambam means. Chakir Gadol, the Rambam means very, very deep. But it'll give you a little bit of insight into how it works, you see? The thing is like this. We mentioned, somebody asked a question, we mentioned in the discussion in class, I think, about the problem of somebody hits somebody on the head, so he stops thinking. And according to the Rambam, thought is the Tzalam Elokim, correct? Machshava is the Tzalam Elokim, right? So therefore, so the question is, how could you interfere, how could you hit a person on the head and stop his nefesh? So what do we say? He said, that in this world, kol zman, a person is in the guf, so he needs the vehicle of the intellect. Somehow the intellect is tied in there. You see, the mind, the physical brain, the brain, I'll use the word brain, the brain is good. So therefore, in this olam, in this world, the brain is used as a tool. And it's related somehow to the neshama. How is it not that easy to explain? But I want to give a little bit of insight into the area. I'm not going to go all the way, but a little bit of insight. You see, let's say, for instance, when a person thinks, let's say, for instance, you studied film, right? So when you study film, you understand, you're not really studying the physical box of the film, correct? You're studying, you see, the first thing you do is you're studying the abstract concept of the mitzvah. So the abstract concept of the mitzvah film, alright? Now really the idea of mitzvah film, the idea of mitzvah film is a concept. It's not a physical thing, it's an idea. Okay? Alright. Now an idea is not to be equated with a physical thing. Let me go one step lower. Let's say, for instance, we were studying the box of the film. The film has to have a certain form, right? Just the plain form of the film, okay? Now, the form of film, of course, the actual film are physical. But when I think of the form of the form is not a physical thing. Let me give you an example. You see? Form, right. I'll give you an example. Let's say, for instance, you have a concept. It's a concept, the form. Let's say, for instance, you have a concept of a man, right? So you have a concept, you have an idea in your mind of man, right? Okay. Now, there's two things. When you think of man, when I say man is such, or man is that, I don't mean this particular man or that particular man. What do I mean? I mean any man. Now, no one has ever seen an any man. There's no such thing as an any man, right? But any man, the concept man is an idea, it's a concept. Okay? Is that clear to everybody? The difference between the particular man and between the concept man. If all you had to perceive was physical, all you would perceive is this man and that man. But you wouldn't have an idea, a universal idea of man. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. Now here's the tricky part. When I say you have a universal idea of man, so you might think to yourself, that what do I mean? I mean you have an image in your mind of man. You have an image, a picture in your mind of what a man is like, right? You see? Now the truth of the matter is that it is correct that you have this image in your mind. But this image of man in your mind is still not the concept man. Can anybody prove it to me? Let's say, for instance, you have an idea of man, right? You have a concept man. Now this concept means you have something in your mind which will apply to a given number of beings. And you have already set these things aside as man. Right? Yes. Now, the same thing with the concept of film. You have a concept. When we study Hilchas film, we're not interested in this film or that film. We're interested in Hilchas film per se. So we have a concept of an entity of film. All right? Now, the concept of the entity is not the image of the entity. Because it is true that in your mind you have an image of a box. When you think of film, you're going to think of a box, right? But the box that you think of is a physical image, which is reproduced in the mind. That's not the same thing as the concept film. I'll show you. See, film's a little bit harder to show. I'll show it to you in the case of man. Let's say, for instance, you have an image of man. Now, an image, you can only have one image. You can't have five images at one time, right? Now, let's say your image is a mediocre image. It's an image of a person who is 5'8", 5'10", and he's 150 pounds, right? Okay, that's your image, let's say. Now, let's say you see a man that is 6'7", and he's 450 pounds, right? Is that the same as the image that you had in your mind?
No.
No. But would he be man?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So what does it show you? So what does it show you? No, not the wrong image. If it's the wrong image, so then how come you identify this 6'7", 450-pound individual as man? What's the answer? What do you see from this?
He's not the man you were thinking of.
You see one thing. You see that what?
He's not the man you were thinking of.
Well, how can you call him man if he's not the man
you're thinking of? Because you're thinking of man as the concept of man itself, and you have the wrong perspective.
Because the answer is that. What's the answer, Greg? You see, even though you have this image in your mind, the point still remains that from this image, there's something else in the mind that from this image takes out certain parts and constructs it and defines it, says that these are essences. In other words, like this. You have that image of man in your mind, right? But the concept goes beyond the image. The concept says that this is important and that's not important. The fact that he's skinny doesn't matter. The fact that he's short doesn't matter. That concept doesn't deal with the physical anymore. You understand what I'm saying? So the image is only an example, a physical example, but the concept goes beyond the image, beyond the physical. You understand? That shows you that there's something in the human being, something in Adam, which goes beyond the physical concept. Beyond the physical image, I mean. Beyond the physical image. Something which perceives an entity, which perceives an existence, which is not physical. Although, one thing we see also, strangely enough, it always works concurrently with the image. It's an amazing thing. Because whenever you think of universal man, you're going to have an image of man, regardless. But then when you see other cases, you're going to say, yeah, that doesn't matter. This image, you'll keep changing your image. Yeah, that doesn't matter. Why? Because there's something in Adam, you understand, which perceives the essence of the thing, and the image is only there as an example, but the image isn't the essence. You follow? However, nevertheless, as long, whenever a person thinks, the image always appears. When we study Hilchos Tefillin, again, in Hilchos Tefillin, we're studying abstractions, and all halachas that way. All halachas abstractions. All halachas is concepts, right? When we study the concept, you might be studying the concept of tefillin, small tefillin, big tefillin. If the tefillin is, tefillin has certain given shapes, so you can't change it around too much. But the point still remains, the point still, you'll see tefillin that are very small. You'll say, hey, I didn't think of that, I didn't think of my image, but is it tefillin? Yeah, because Allah defines the tefillin. So even though you have one image of tefillin in your mind, there is something which perceives beyond the image and which knows what the essence is. Although, whenever it thinks, whenever it works, it's always going to have the image with it. You follow what I'm saying? So it shows you, in a sense, what am I trying to point out? I'm trying to point out something. We mentioned last time, we were discussing about how a person goes from the physical, why a person is limited by the physical. And I gave you an example that how things seem unreal. That's why when we speak about a Kadosh Baruch, we get a certain feeling of unreality, regardless of the fact that we believe in a Kadosh Baruch's existence. And the reason is because the physical, we're still attached to the physical, you see? Here you get an opportunity to see how the mind works every day that way, that the mind works with the physical, it has the image, and yet there's something beyond which perceives an idea, a concept, which is not physical. In this Olam HaTachtein, in this world, we always operate with a physical image. That's Kilei Rani Yodav Vachoy. It's the same thing as I explained last time, but I'm giving you another example. You follow? Because man, as long as he's tied to the physical, to the senses play a tremendous role. We couldn't conceive. Let's say, could you even conceive of an idea, of a concept without an image related to it? You can't even conceive of it because everything in your mind is based upon that. See, that's right. That's like the blind man trying to perceive sight. Can't do it. Okay. That's why in the world, I'm just mentioning this, agavorcha, but the physicists today have tremendous amount of difficulties because the more they go and try to construe the atom and try to construe things, different things in physics, they say that problems grow with the solutions. What is a light wave? Is it particles or is it a wave? You see, it is quite possible that the Bria, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Bria, you see, you have to understand something. Let's say, for instance, there was something that was created of which we cannot make an image. Even in the physical world, we couldn't make an image. You understand what would happen? We wouldn't be able to perceive it, because you can never get that image. You're dealing with raw concepts, you see? Now, it's quite possible in the Bria itself, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Bria. Certain parts of the Bria we can conceive. You can see it at the table, because you can have an image of the table and you have a concept of the table. But it could very well be that in the Bria there are things which do not lend themselves to imagery. If they don't lend themselves to imagery, then it means they're just concepts. So then it is quite possible that man will reach his limit. He will never be able, in his mind, to really construe it. You follow what I'm saying? Then you'd reach the human limitation in the area of science. That's when you'd reach the human limitation. You understand what I'm saying? Because you'd be in an area, you'd be dealing with entities of which no image could be formed in the human mind. You follow? So then everything you're trying to construe, like you try to formulate the atom, it could very well, you understand what I'm saying? You're trying to construe it through imagery. But if it's an object which doesn't lend itself to imagery, you see, then you're not going to be able to do it, because you're going to have to be dealing with raw concepts. You follow what I'm saying?
What's
wrong with
that?
You can't, man, whenever man operates, man's human knowledge is... No, that's why with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have no, that's what the Rambam says. In regard to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is only negative knowledge. Negative knowledge. We can't have a positive. Yeah, he lay on out of a heart. That's a wrong episode. But negative attributes. That's all we know about a Kaddish Baruch Hu. He is not physical. He is not many. Even when we say he's one, it doesn't mean one like our kind. Because when we say one, immediately you have an image of one. You think of one stick. You think of one table. You think of one entity. You see, the image is always there. You follow? But a Kaddish Baruch Hu is beyond that. So therefore, we reach our limitations when we come to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. The only time we will be able to perceive this is only after death, in the next world, when the soul frees itself of the physical limitations. You follow what I'm saying? But actually, what I'm trying to show you is that even in this world, you see, you can get an insight. You can start seeing. You can almost see like how the neshama is working. You understand what I'm saying? How its limitations, because it has to operate through physical properties. See? Of course, halacha is more abstract, by the way, than physics, because in the physical world, when we deal with the table, so you deal with the physical entity, right? So you abstract the concept of the physical. But halacha is double. First you have the physical, then you have the halachic concept, and then you make an abstraction in the halachic concept itself. It's two steps removed from the physical. That's why halacha is a difficult subject. Okay. Yeah. Because when you're dealing, correct. You see, you're dealing with entities of tumah and tahara, you understand? Of course they have their base, they exist in a physical thing. You understand? They exist. But the halachic category itself is abstract, and now you're trying to operate within that category. It's two steps removed. Whereas physics, you're dealing with the physical thing itself. Yeah, abstracting the thing. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. All right. I think it's an important idea, and I think that the idea is not one they should just listen to in Shia right now and just, you know, just go away with it. I think that you should really think it over. That's why the Rambam says that the Hanoah of the to perceive what goes on in the next world is very difficult for man. Why? Because... Yeah. He says the only way, that's what the Rambam says, achachakira gedela. It means the only way we could perceive it is by talking about it like we're doing now, you see, and showing in the direction in which it is, you know what I mean? But to really experience it is impossible, because it's beyond our experience. The only thing we can do is logically we could start showing how it starts working, how it works, what the area is. We can see it in ourselves even now to a degree, you see, but you can't really experience it. You understand what I'm saying? That's what the Rambam's saying. Very deep concept. Very deep
concept.
Chacham, he could see the ability that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him, because he sees how it works. He sees how it operates. You understand what I mean? But simultaneously, he sees the limitations as well. Okay? But he could see what it is. See that it's there. That it's there. You know what I mean? Yeah. The area that we're discussing right now is the union between the neshama, the nefesh, and between the physical. There's a union there. It's a mysterious thing. It's something that we don't fully grasp. But we're just showing that, you know, how it works. Somehow we just know certain rules about it. Why it is that way, we don't know. But we do know that that's the way it is. You see? Why it is the way it is chakira gedela? I mean, that we don't know. Chakira means deep thought. Chakira means when you start, literally it means, actually it means, what the Rambam means here, what the Rambam means is... But that is why the whole Torah is against Avodah Zarah. I want you to know, it's not simply the Torah is against a band of Hottentots who serve an idol. It's deeper than that. It's not just primitive Avodah Zarah the Torah is against. There's primitive Avodah Zarah, of course, but the real Avodah Zarah is, Avodah Zarah means Leisasun Iti Elohe Chesav Elohe Zarah. It means even if you make it of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it means that a person is Mechuyev to be able to realize that at this point his mind goes blank. There is no image anymore. It's the cessation of images. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is beyond that. And the moment a person tries to employ an image which will give him an idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's Avodah Zarah. That is Avodah Zarah. That's a very good point. You see, you could see it in operation in a sense, in a small way. Like, for instance, when you have the more universal the image, the vaguer it gets. Like, you see one man, so you see a particular man, so you have an image of that man in your brain, right? Then when you start universalizing, the image loses a lot of things. It loses the particular eyes, it starts losing a lot of things.
It loses everything.
But it fills an image, it gets a vague image.
What does the image
have? It's an image of, it's a certain picture, I mean, a certain image in your mind. Lein roi etzlenu bale hatora velo etzel Elohim min hafilosufen. What does he say? Why does he say? One incidental point, a side point I want to mention is why does he say it's not fitting for us who are the Balei HaTorah or the Lo Eitzel Vein Roy Eslena Balei HaTorah Eitzel Ho'olohiyim Min HaFilosufim, and it's not fitting for the philosophers who know metaphysics. Elohiyim means the metaphysicians.
Real ones.
Rambam holds that a person, the Rambam Sheet, as he mentions in his Hakdamah Pirush Mishnayos too, that a person with his own mind, if he really has a Seichel HaYosher, he can perceive many, many things that Yadis maintains as well. You see? Like Avraham Avinu did. Okay? Before Yadis. So when Rambam says the Elohim HaFilosufim, he means those philosophers which really were able to reach certain truths, which are really true. Because since the thing is true, a person who has a very good mind, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a Tzelem HaLashim, will be able to work it out himself. As a matter of fact, Tzadik Goyen starts off his Pirush. The first question he asks is like this. Since philosophy, he says, meaning true philosophy, real knowledge of Hashem, is possible for every person, so why did Hashem have to give the Torah? He said, since you can work it out yourself. So Sadi's going to answer. He says, certain things, that's his question, certain things you can't work out because it's too chukim, and other things you can work out, but even those things that you can't work out, he says, it's a very unusual person that can do it. So it'll come out that a whole Ummah will go without any knowledge, and only these few individuals will have it. Okay, you see that there were, the Rambam says, there were individuals in the world that did hit on the right ideas, but you see the world doesn't have it today. Why? Because there's no, just those people that had it, and the ones that nobody else had it. Okay. Why does Rambam break it up into two groups? It's not fitting for us who are Balei HaTorah, or for the metaphysicians. What is this breakup? Is it just Stam the Rambam puts it in, or the Rambam means something else?
What do you say?
Sinai and Avraham Avinu. What do I mean? There are two ways that you can have knowledge. One way is secondary knowledge, and one way is primary knowledge. Do you want to make that distinction already?
Yeah.
Right, we said Sinai is secondary knowledge. Sinai will be equivalent to a person knowing that the doctor has the right prescription. Right? Avraham Avinu would be more than that. What would Avraham Avinu be? Be really understanding and knowing why it's the right prescription. That's primary knowledge. See? Sinai was... I told you, Sinai, everybody was so excited about Sinai. Sinai is fine. Sinai is the secondary, but that's not the end. Sinai is only the beginning.
Yeah.
That's the beginning. Then, after Sinai, you have the chiyuv of Talmud Torah. B'shinantum levanecho, b'shiftu esecho, v'chkod derech. That's Talmud Torah. Constant learning. Why is Talmud Torah connected to Kulam? Because that's to reach primary knowledge, to reach back to the primary, where you really see the ideas. You understand what I mean? So there's two types. I'll give you an example. You have in the Rambam Ali, in the end, we'll give you the Yud Gimel Ikar. The Yud Gimel Ikar, the Rambam gives, right? Now the Yud Gimel Ikar, that the Rambam mentions, the Rambam isn't going to explain them really, all the bases and all the proofs. Take a look, there's a very small thing in each one. To understand those, you say this is tremendous, tremendous chachma. Tremendous chachma. He's just telling you the facts. And he says in the end, if a person does not accept these facts, the Rambam says he is Einu Mekal Yisrael, Haroi L'Seinu L'Abdei. Why? Why? What's so important about knowing the facts? What's the answer? The answer is a person that has secondary knowledge is far closer to than a person that doesn't have any secondary knowledge. He's closer to the truth. At least he knows the results. At least he knows where to look for the medication. He knows it's over there. He doesn't understand it, but he's closer to the truth. And the whole purpose of Torah, the whole purpose of our creation, of our existence, is to reach the truth. That's why the first mitzvah in Yesodei HaTorah is Leidas Hashem. Why Leidas Hashem? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to understand the world, you have to have knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the whole purpose is knowledge. Now the person, ultimately, the highest form of knowledge is what? Is primary. Like you understand like the Rambam understood the Ikar. But if we don't understand like the Rambam understood the Ikar, but at least you have the secondary knowledge. But a person who doesn't have the secondary knowledge is Einu Mekal Yisrael. So you see, secondary knowledge is not to be frowned upon. Secondary knowledge is important. Okay? Now, that's what the Rambam means over here. Ve'ein roi etzleinu
balei ha-tara. What does it mean, balei ha-tara?
He means by the authority of Torah. That's one. In other words, the people who are balei ha-tara must accept from the balei ha-masora that it's so. That those existences, those intelligences have a taina gamiti. That's right. That's second analogy. Right. Mm-hmm. Nor is it fitting for a person who's a metaphysician, a true metaphysician. What does he mean by a true metaphysician? He means a person that really is. That's right. So what the Rambam is saying is there is a real proof for this fact, and that's known to the real metaphysicians. But even if a person isn't a real chacham on that madriga, but since he's a balei ha-tara, he's one of the balei ha-tara, he must accept this conclusion. You see, the Rambam means a person who accepts secondary knowledge or primary knowledge, both of them will have to agree, namely that what? That there is an attendant enjoyment with the perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that intelligences that are not physical are in a constant state of pleasure, constant state of enjoyment, because they're constantly perceiving the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? There's an analogy. It says, just like a person who is a king has reached a very high madriga, he doesn't want to lose his kingdom and go play ball like he did when he was a kid. But when he was a kid, the whole thing to him, the greatest enjoyment was playing ball. He didn't care about these other things, right? But now, when he's in a high madriga, he looks down and he realizes that this is nonsense, that there's a greater thing than that. You see? He says, that's the way we are. We're like the kids. We're like the kid. A kid is, if a kid thinks what is important, he can't, to him, he's convinced emotionally that playing ball is the greatest enjoyment. He gets older, he sees there are bigger things than that. You see? So too, he says, we are on the same madriga. Why do we feel that the tanuge agufa so great? Why do we feel tanuge agufa so great? Because our emotions tell us right now that they're so great. We haven't seen anything greater. We haven't reached a higher level. But the moment we reach a higher level, we will look down at these enjoyments as nothing and nonsensical. You follow? All right, we'll continue this point tomorrow. And then we'll continue with his point also. The question that you raised. The question that Samuel's raised. Namely, just because it's eternal, why do we say it's better? But you see, the Rambam's going to go into that point right now. So we'll take up that. Before we finish this area, you have to answer your question. Okay. Samuel's question was why we must say that an eternal enjoyment is greater than a temporary enjoyment. Okay?
Eternal.
To have an enjoyment is two factors, basically. Two factors. Those guys who might have gone through some of these things already. So far, one in the Mishmar. Two factors. One factor is the time, right?
Yeah.
The time. And the second factor is the intensity, right?
Quality and quantity.
Now, the intensity of a pleasure is determined by how much energy you could put into it. You see? How much energy you could put into it. Now, when a person is on a lower madrega, you see, he has a lot of his energy is elsewhere. That's why I don't think that stamazay taivas, taivas are just nothing. Guy did he's involved in taivas at 2 o'clock. He is involved in taivas achila. Now, 3 o'clock, he's learning. It's different things. It's gone already. It's not true. It's gone. Because the point is, insofar as he's involved in taivas achila, a certain amount of his energy is directed towards that thing. You see? Now, the more a person pulls himself away from the world of taiva, the more energy he frees to put himself into the learning. So that as a person develops, he gets much more hano out of learning. Because the intensity increases. And the intensity really increases. So I want to mention this, even though it's a side point, I want to mention it because I think it's a very good point, very important point. You see, excuse me? Yeah, theoretically, it should increase to a certain point and it shouldn't get any greater, right? That's right, that's possible. But practically speaking, I don't know how true that is, because a person, there is so much that a person can do, so many changes, that it would seem that in 70 years he would be constantly undergoing more change. I mean, it doesn't say for everybody, you know, I'm just saying on the whole. You could say a guy's tremendous, God will reach his peak at 20, I mean, maybe if only Diana didn't change from 30 to 60, I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine that, because I've seen it's possible, I don't know. Theoretically, you're right. Practically speaking, I don't think it works out that way. But the point involved is this. One point I want to make is like this, that I want you to know one thing. This is a side point, but I think it's important. That the enjoyment of learning, there's two stages in the enjoyment of learning. First, you'll see the arguments. You'll understand why Torah is really the greatest life. You'll see the arguments. But that is only the first step. When a person knows he's really won the battle, he's over the main hurdle, it's when he can look down emotionally at another hana'ah. You know what I'm saying? Another one, I guess. Like when first you start reliving, you say, you look at different hanoas in life. Different people say, well, this guy has a sports car, this guy has a this or that. And when you first feel it, the taifa gets you, pulls you, draws you, you know? Then you start analyzing the typing. You start saying, one second, does he really, how much enjoyment does he really have? Look at all the pain he has to go through, you know. Look at all the pain he has to go through until he gets it. While he has it, there's a tremendous amount of pain involved. It's a physical world, things go wrong, he doesn't enjoy, you know. Things didn't go exactly, it's not sunny today, he wanted to take a ride in the sun, doesn't work out, you know. Then, and even the very nature of enjoyment, it's always mixed with desire, because he can only enjoy it as long as he has a desire for it and desires pain. So you start seeing, your mind starts seeing, one second, these things aren't enjoyments, I'm being fooled here. They look like enjoyments, but they're not. You see, that's the first step, when you analyze it rationally. But that's not, what? No, none of these facts are true about terror. None of these facts are true about terror. I thought you knew it. You know, there's two factors. When a person, if I gave you the argument, so we will go through the arguments, Shem, but when you go through it, you'll see it, and you really see that it's true. But the only thing is this, he's right. When you go and play basketball, you'll get drawn again. Now, I want you to understand something. This is a fact. The fact is that a taiva is not just the action of the moment, like I told you before. A taiva, somehow or other, affects our intelligence. Yeah, it convinces you. You can't just do a taiva and say, that's it, I didn't enjoy myself. No, because you had pleasure, it convinces you into thinking that there's something good there, you see? And it corrupts the mind. This we went through when I spoke about other Marishan also. It corrupts the mind, you see? That's the way man is made. So that's one reason why you don't have the conviction. And another reason is, there's another reason also, and this is experience. This I could tell you, you're going to learn from experience. When a person knows the truth, and he really knows what the Hanoah of learning is, and he sees that the other things are shtus, really sees it, there still is an experience he has to go through. Because like I say, he'll probably get caught. He probably won't stop at the argument. It'll be a very unusual guy. I'll just see an argument and say, okay, I'm going to stop. That's it. But you'll have to go through living through it. And then after a while, you'll start really experiencing it. You'll start saying, yeah, well, this is really, it's really not, it's really nothing. You know what I mean? Then, once you go through the experience and you can see, when you can see a guy got a new sports car, and you can think to yourself, boy, it's Rachmanis, the guy's involved in that type of, wow. See? You know, you feel the joy of being free. You think, wow, Baruch Hashem, I really have a tremendous Hanoah. And this guy's caught in this. It's a terrible thing. Like, you really see he's caught in a trap. You know? It's like you see a guy in the desert running after the mirages. You say, you know what I mean? When you can see that, you can feel it. That's when you know you're over the hurdle. That's why I tell you, there's two stages. One stage is seeing the argument. Then you have to live through experiences. And when you live through experiences, as long as you remember the arguments, you live through experiences, then you're going to come to the final thing where your emotions themselves will start feeling that this is real. You really feel it and see it. You don't quite... You see? That's when it's real. Huh? That's change in other. Once that change takes place, then you know you have it. You see? Okay. Enjoyment is greater than the enjoyment which is subject to time. Now, first of all, the answer, mathematically, you can answer it very quickly. Because the quantitative factor, no matter how great the enjoyment is, if it's measurable, it cannot be great. It cannot be great as great as the infinite. I mean, that's it. Measurable can be as great as the infinite. That's all. The thing is like this, that when we say an infinite enjoyment, we don't mean that infinite in time. You see, we mentioned before, infinite means it's extra time, it's outside of time, right? Okay? Alright. Now, what we mean by extra time is, outside of time means that the enjoyment is more real. What do I mean by the enjoyment being more real? The enjoyment is more real. Outside of time means more real. Because that, which thing, when we say real, what do we mean? Real means it exists. Something exists, it's real, right? Now, if I could show you that something has more existence than another thing, wouldn't that mean that this is more real? Wouldn't it mean it's more real? After, right? Okay. So you'll tell me, but how does a thing have more existence?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And the answer is very simple. That inherently by nature, when we say a thing exists in time, inherently it means it the type of existence it is limited. You understand what I mean? You follow what I mean? So that you have limited existence and you have unlimited existence. Now which one's more real? The unlimited existence is more real. More real, sure. Because real always means existence. Listen to what you're saying. When we say something's real, what do we mean? We mean it exists, right? Now, if something is superior in existence, so it has to be more real.
Right?
Right? Yeah. Okay. Now, that which is subject to time, right? Which existence is greater? A thing which exists and has limitations, or a thing that exists without limitations?
Without limitations.
So therefore, the existence of that which is eternal is greater, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, it's more real. It's more real. Do you understand what I mean?
It's more meaningful.
No. Why? That's right. That's why. That's why, what is the most real existence in the world? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you see? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence is unlimited in any way. You see? That's why in the physical world, excuse me, yeah, I know, but it's not, sorry. But the point is that I want to show you that really, again, you make a 180 degree turn when you really go into thought. That's why the Rambam mentions in his Maamar Matchias HaMeisim. So like this. He says, to people, the physical is real. But the truth of the matter is, it's exactly the opposite. Once a person starts perceiving the world beyond the physical, and he sees that this world is unlimited because it doesn't have the limitations of the physical, so therefore, by definition, it's more real. So therefore, what is the most real? The most real is that which is the most unlimited. The most unlimited is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the ultimate reality, the reality of realities, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the only thing that's real in the universe. That's why the Rambam says, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't exist, if it would be possible to say that, he says that nothing could exist. All right. Now the question is, you have two enjoyments. You have an enjoyment which is... which is one enjoyment which is more real, and one enjoyment which is less real. You understand what I mean? Which enjoyment is the greater? Which enjoyment is the greater? Okay. His answer was that you feel it, since it's more real, so you feel it better. You feel it better. But his that really doesn't answer your question. Logically speaking, it doesn't answer it yet. Why? Because you could say it's true, you could feel it better, but what are you feeling? That which you're feeling is not as great as the other guy. You know what I mean? Okay, what's yours?
Enjoyment. Okay, so what causes a limitation? What causes you not to have full amounts of energy into that area when you have limitations? But if it's infinite, you don't have any limitations, so therefore it must be the greatest enjoyment.
Maybe we need to know that
infinite together. That's right. I still say the same argument. I still say you're right. That the amount of energy I could put in is limitless. But what am I putting it into? Something is not as good as the other thing, right? Okay. So far we only have one answer, the first one, the mathematical, right? All right. Now I tell you the answer is. Quality in this world is different. And since the quality is better, I don't know why we should assume so, but if we should assume so, man is right, you have to say every possibility. If one assumes that it's so, then the question is going to be, maybe the quality over here is better. I over there, it's eternal, all those other miles. Fine, it's more real, yes, but what's more real? The nature of the thing that's more real isn't as great as as over here, right? Good question. Troubles are missing one thing. When the Rambam says that it's not fitting for us to say that there is no enjoyment for the intelligences, you see, for those things that are not physical. Don't forget, do never confuse not physical with not real. It's exactly the opposite. The average man always thinks that physical is real. It's because he's very close to the senses.
So
when a person really sees
real.
The ideas,
that's right.
That's why really the truth of the matter is that the whole system of Torah we know is to take a person away from Taiva. I mean, you know this. And also, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is the Isra Avodah Zarah, that there shouldn't be anything physical. It's all one thing. It's not just separate things in the Torah. It's one idea. Because when a person goes away from Taiva, he goes into the world of real. The moment he's close to the senses, the things to him are real is the physical. It's a whole direction, removal from the physical to the person. You understand what I mean? Okay. Well, what the Rambam means is as follows. What is enjoyment? Let's define what enjoyment is. What is enjoyment? Enjoyment is, pleasure is, when an organism does that which it was created for. Do you understand that? Okay. In other words, I guess, when a person has taivas achila, so it means that the taste buds are functioning in the way that they were created, right? A person drinks something, he's thirsty, so the body gets enjoyment because the body was created for this thing. When the body fulfills that which it was created for, when an object, an organism fulfills that which it was created for, you get enjoyment, right?
That's pleasure.
Is the body, is the organism fulfilling that for which it was created. When a monkey is climbing on a tree in Africa, he's having enjoyment because he's fulfilling exactly what it's created for. Okay? Good point. But aside from, well, let's forget about that point for a moment. He's right. But let's take it more simply. I want to break it down a little more. If there are two parts to man, right? And one part is real, more real than the other, correct? And that part that is more real, shouldn't we say that that part also was created for a certain function? Correct?
Yeah.
All right, now that part which is more real was created for a certain function. And when that part which is more real achieves that enjoyment, right? Now mustn't of necessity that enjoyment be greater? Because the thing, the organism itself is more real. And therefore, you understand what I'm saying? In other words, this. No. If we say, in other words, you have an organism, right? And pleasure is defined as the organism achieving what it was created for, right? Therefore, an organism which is whose existence is incomplete, and an organism whose existence is incomplete, could never have that, could never possibly have the achievement of an organism which is real. So therefore, the pleasure must be greater. Do you understand what I'm saying? All right, let me see if I can explain a little better. You know what I'm trying to say? Pleasure is always measured by the satisfaction that the organism gets. If the organism is inherently limited in existence, so inherently the satisfaction is inherently limited. Do you follow what I mean? Exactly. So therefore, but if an organism is real, so it exists more, so naturally the enjoyment which it gets has to be greater, because the whole thing is more real. You understand what I mean? That's it. If it was if the organism is more real, so it was created for more. Do you understand what I mean? Because it has to. You're dealing with more of a creature. You're dealing with more of an entity.
Right.
You understand? So a real entity will have, a real entity, when it reaches its satisfaction, has real satisfaction. The other thing, since it's a partial entity, only can have partial. Do you understand what I mean? But the question of quality is bubble. What's the question? What a partial entity is the physical existence. Ram says that it's foolish to think that the malachim do not have any enjoyment. Why is it foolish? Because the enjoyment always consists in the thing doing what it's doing its creative purpose. Now, therefore, you have two things that were created. One is half real and one is completely real. And each one's doing its thing. So, therefore, the one that's more real has to have more real enjoyment by definition. That's a universal definition. Hence, the definition of pleasure is a being achieving what it... Listen. Yes. Since the definition of pleasure is a being achieving what it was created for, right? A superior being has to have a superior pleasure. It has to follow that way. You understand what I mean? Has to. It's why yuchal imolik. That's the way it has to be. Understand? Final formulation. Since the definition of pleasure is a being achieving its goal, then a superior being has to have superior pleasure. That's why the Rambam says that you shouldn't think that malachim don't have any pleasure. Why must the malach have pleasure? Because the definition of pleasure is what? Is the being, yes, the being, you can't speak of pleasure anymore, because it's a different type of thing. You only say a state of perfection. That would be the best thing. God is in the greatest state of perfection. Greatest state of perfection. What is Ram saying over here? What's Ram saying? Actually, we can ask a very simple question on the Rambam. I mean, the Rambam says that in the next world, the enjoyment is not a psychological one either. Correct?
What does that happen to have anything?
Is the Rambam saying that the psychological is better than the physical? Is the Rambam saying that? That the psychological is superior to the physical?
No.
Because I would ask, really. Is the psychological greater? Right. What is worse? Let me ask you, what is worse? A person, in other words, Ram is saying that just like in this world, we look down upon the physical, right? Excuse me? Because the people, many people, you see in their lifetimes, they run after money, they run after honor, right? Now, money and honor is not enough. Money isn't the physical. The physical, most people do not go after money for the physical. That's only the first stage. When people want to go into the endless sea of the accumulation of wealth, that's not physical anymore, because he has enough to live for the rest of his life. He has everything he needs. But it's a type of a drive which is simply expressed itself in ego. It's an ego drive. You see, it's an ego trip. It's not because of enjoyment. Because most people, I'm talking about people who are wealthy, they have enough money to go on for the next 50 years, 100 years. They still keep going after money. Why? This is not anymore for physical enjoyment. They have enough food, they have enough, they have a home, they have a car, what do they want? They're after ego. It's an ego drive of power and ego. That's the greatest drive. See, that's why they keep on going. That's what the Rambam's talking about. He says most people, their whole lives is for this. They kill themselves for that. So the Rambam says, so you see, they frown upon what? They frown upon the physical enjoyment. He says, just like they frown upon the physical enjoyment, so too, in Olam Haba, people frown upon all types of physical, even the psychological. Okay. Now, I want to know, is the Rambam saying that the psychological is superior to the physical?
Yeah.
Superior. Okay, so let me ask you, who's the worst Russia? A person who sits down and eats an extra steak because of taiva, or a person who takes nekama from his enemies?
Nekama.
A person takes nekama lachar, right? Sure. If you look through history, the worst evils were committed not by people who are balei taiva physically, but people who are balei taiva psychologically. Was Haman a balei taiva physically?
No.
Haman, was he about that? Pure, all ego, all completely ego. V'chol zayin ha-shevali, v'chol eis ha-shedi reyes, mordech ha-yehudi, yeshe v'sham melech. L'kom v'l'azam imeno. What's l'kom v'l'azam imeno? What upset him? He doesn't get up. Because of ego, so which one's worse? Would appear. Okay, so that's the case. So why does the Rambam place that in a higher level than the other one? Yes?
Because this
lies. The Rambam is just saying that the psychological enjoyment is greater. He's not saying that it's better for the person, right? He's just saying the psychological enjoyment is greater, right? But then let me ask you a question. If if the enjoyment is greater, so then we'd have a question. It would turn out that the better life,
it's physical,
the better life has less enjoyment. Wouldn't that be odd?
Wow, better life.
That is the physical enjoyment. You're saying the physical enjoyments are less, right? The psychological enjoyment of the kama is greater, right? But if that's the case, if the psychological enjoyment of the kama is greater, so it comes out which of the two lives is better? The physical or the psychological?
Physical.
Which two? The physical, right? They say that that's less enjoyable.
Yes, that goes against the Rambam also.
What?
That goes against the Rambam also.
Right?
Yeah.
All right, that's a good possibility. He says like this. So Samuel says that it means like this. It means he thinks it's a greater enjoyment. In reality, it isn't. In reality, it's more pain. It's similar to what you said. It's similar to what you said. Because in reality, it's more. But why does he go after that? Because he thinks it's a greater enjoyment. But all the Rambam wants to illustrate is what? What does Rambam want to illustrate? That a person who has an enjoyment that he thinks is greater, when a person has an enjoyment that he thinks is greater, he frowns upon what? He frowns upon an enjoyment that he thinks is inferior. Correct? Okay? That's why the Rambam says that it is not hard to understand why what? Why a person in Olam Haba really frowns upon all the enjoyments that we have. Why? Because correct. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes. A person in Olam Haba, there's no reason to say a person in Olam Haba doesn't know what a physical enjoyment is. He can't experience it anymore. But he could know it through knowledge what it is. He can understand it and he could see that he doesn't want it. You see? Yes. The difference between the physical pleasures and the psychological pleasures are very simple. Let me explain to you. One is a reality, one is an imagination. In other words, like this. When a person eats a steak and he enjoys it, it's a reality that his taste buds react in a, certain way and he enjoys it, right? But when a person decides he has to take revenge, revenge doesn't exist in reality because, in other words, like this, the fact that the other person is harmed in reality doesn't benefit him. It only benefits him insofar as he has already set up in his mind that this is a good for him. You understand what I'm saying? It's purely an arbitrary, it's an artificial type of thing. In psychological enjoyment, it's completely artificial. On the contrary, the pleasures that are realistic are the physical pleasures. The psychological, like a person makes up his mind that he wants to have a lot of money so people should honor him, right? Now, really, when people honor him, it really isn't the good. It's not a real good. It's just that because he believes that that's a good. You see? It's just based upon the fact that he thinks this is so. In reality, it's not so. Reality doesn't conform to that. You understand what I mean? Follow? So therefore, the in terms of who's further away from reality, definitely which guy's further away from reality? The guy that's involved in psychological enjoyment, because there's no base for it at all. You understand what I'm saying? Let me give you what? In other words, psychological pleasure is further away from reality for the simple reason that what? That it's a false value system. He set up his mind. This is a value system. He set up in his mind that if everybody bows down to him, this is great. Right? Now, there's nothing really to corroborate this. It's just something he made up in his mind. It's completely artificial. You understand what I mean? Psychological pleasures are complete frauds because it's completely artificial. Masha ain't came physical enjoyments. At least there is some basis in reality.
But
you understand what I'm saying?
I
say the psychological pleasures are not real pleasures. That means because they're not true. You understand? By learning, we're saying just the opposite. We're saying that man's there's a part of man which was created for this, and he really has a total enjoyment, a real enjoyment out of it. You understand? Not because he thinks. Let me put it this way. Now, let's say a person decides that being a great lawyer, that's a great thing, right? Being a great lawyer is a great thing. Now, there is nothing reality to corroborate. This is totally in his mind. It's completely artificial, right? But let's say, when we say that a person learns and gets enjoyment, it's not because he decided that learning is good and that's the enjoyment he's getting out of it. We say there is a real pleasure there because man was made, he was constructed in such a way that this really affords him the greatest pleasure. You understand what I mean? That's the difference. By psychological pleasures like nekama, there is no basis for nekama. He made it up in his mind. It's completely artificial. It's an imagination. You know, it's imaginary enjoyment. Mashiach came learning. By learning, we're saying that this is the way man was created. You understand? So therefore, that's a real pleasure. We say that there's a part of him that actually enjoys this, that really gains a know out of this. Not because he decided he wants to be a guy that learns. You understand what I mean? That's it. That's ego. That's psychological. A guy says, I want to be a learner. And now he thinks to himself, I'm a great learner. I'm very happy. That's psychological. That's not. Lishmo went through that already. That's purely an imagination because he decided this is his image he wanted. He made up an image. He decided he's going to fulfill that image. That's his enjoyment. But we're saying learning per se, the actual learning is an enjoyment. You understand what I mean? That's it. Yes, I do. She's a gayish idea. I told you. Many times, the guy, they decided that they're going to destroy their body. So they go into deserts and they torture themselves. This is tipshit. This is tipshit. It's extremism. That comes from a certain emotion. You understand? Yahadus doesn't know from that. Any way to find the terror says, torture yourself. The sixth Tayag mitzvah. Show me one mitzvah says, torture yourself. The worst one is Tanas Nashasechem Yom Kippur. That's the size they won't find torture yourself. So the terror holds. On the contrary, the physical is good. There's nothing wrong with the physical. The Kodesh Baruch Hu created a goof and he hates the goof and wants you to destroy it. That's absurdity. But he wants you to live the best life, which means the perfect balance where everything's satisfied in the proper way. You understand what I mean? That's what Yashami says also. Yashami says a person who does not have an off in this world, a person who walks by and doesn't eat a fruit and doesn't have an off in this world is Asid Litna Sadin. Kodesh Baruch will say to him, why didn't you have an off? I gave you the honor, why didn't you have it? You understand? Because by Rebbe was on such a level where he was completely involved in the highest world. So therefore, that's a level, not that he tortures himself. That's the highest level. What? Yeah. See, the Rambam is trying to show with this mashal that the reason, take the kid. The kid is playing ball, right? Now, to the kid is playing ball, to him the concept of ego is an alien one, right? To him the greatest, this is the enjoyment, he wants to do this all his life, right? And yet that same kid, when he develops, right, will look down upon him and say, hey, that's crazy, right? So what does it show you? The Rambam shows you one thing. He shows you that the reason why he's attached to the physical, why is the kid attached to the physical? Why does the kid believe why is he convinced that the physical is the greatest enjoyment? Because he's attached.
That's right.
So the Rambam says the reason why people deny the enjoyment of Olam HaBa is not out of rational reason. You understand? What is the reason why they deny Olam HaBa? They deny the enjoyment? Because they're just like you're enjoying ball night. I think it's the greatest thing, right? Now I'll explain to you, and I'll give you an example of it. When you get older, you'll look down upon this. You'll think it's nothing. Isn't it crazy? See? Why? Because the conviction is not based on logic. See, there's nothing wrong logically with it. The conviction is based on his emotions at the time. But emotions change. When emotions change, then the guy looks down on it. Why does emotions change? Because he develops. Because his development changes. When a kid doesn't have that much psychic energy. When a person gets older, all of a sudden the psyche starts to come into play. When he becomes Ben Yud Gimel, the psyche starts operating. So therefore, when he becomes a Gadol, you see, he gets into a different area and his enjoyments change completely. That's exactly the way the Rambam explains the mashal over here also. Now the Rambam says, when you think about an enjoyment that we're talking about in Olam Haba, you're going to be hit with an emotion. The emotion is going to be, can't be, ridiculous. What is that emotion based upon, the Rambam says? What is it based upon? It's just like the kid. It's based upon the fact that the only experience of enjoyment that you have right now is not because logically it's not so. You understand? So the Rambam says, I want you to realize that you could see already at this stage that you've gone through two stages. And you should remember the stage when you were a kid, right? And therefore you should realize that just like you see that you went through from one stage to the other, now you look down on that stage, right? Now also you should know that the next stage, you're going to look down on this stage. You follow what I'm saying? In other words, the Rambam's trying to give you through a mushel. He's trying to show you one thing. What is he trying to show you? The what? What is he trying to show you? He's trying to show you one idea. Namely, that you should see through your own emotions. You see? You should see through your own emotions that when something is not logical, you shouldn't have faith in it. You understand what I mean? Just like the kid has faith in his enjoyment to think this is the greatest, right? Then later he's going to laugh at himself in a few years, right? So he says, so too, you're going to laugh at yourself in the next stage.
What about a kid who likes fire?
This really explains the whole problem over here, your question too. When a person, all the Rambam is showing you is like this. You see, really, if you'd ask the Rambam, how many stages does a man have in his life? What would the Rambam say? How many stages does a person go through?
Three.
Three, exactly. First, he has the physical enjoyments when he's a kid. Then later, when the psyche starts working, there's the psychological enjoyments, you see. And then he gets into the world of the psyche. Now, here I want to point out, the fact that the Rambam mentions Nekama and Nekama is worse, that doesn't matter worse or better. But the fact remains that when a person gets older, he gets into the psychological area. Now, if a person goes into the coma, that means he's solving it the wrong way. He's solving a psychological problem in a crazy way, so he's going to be very unhappy. But the fact remains that he realizes one thing. He realizes that now he's in the psychological realm, but he doesn't know how to handle himself, so therefore he's going to get killed. He'll be worse than the kid. He'll be worse than the kid, you understand? But the point remains that it's a different realm that he's operating in now. And the Rambam says the same thing is, that's what the Rambam says, "Ukishe yizdakech mimenu mishi yizdakech." A person that goes up to the higher level, namely to Olam Haba, he gets to the third stage, you see? And when he's in the third stage, then he... Exactly. And then he frowns upon the other stages. All the Rambam wants is one muscle. Namely, the Rambam wants to say, don't be fooled by your emotions. Don't be fooled by your emotions. The reason why you can't believe in Olam Haba is not because logic. The reason why you can't believe in Olam Haba is one thing. Why? Because right now you're attached to the physical. And you experience it, and you think, just because I experience it, gives you a certain conviction. Just like that kid, that when he was there, he also was convinced that this is the greatest thing. You know what I'm saying? He's like this. He means when a person goes into the psychological, he realizes that in the psychological, you see, in the psychological state, he realizes there's a greater pleasure to be dealt with than in the other states. You understand? It's true, he misinterprets. He makes mistakes. But he recognizes that the psychological is far greater than the physical. You understand what I mean? Because now he's operating. Now, you don't understand. Let me explain something. When we say, you see, the word soul, let me use the word soul. I hate to use the word because it's very bad. But the truth of the matter is the Rambam explains that there's, when we say soul, there's a few souls in a person. A soul means something which is an essence in man. A component of man. Not the neshama. A component of man. Now, the basic soul of man, the first soul that a person has is the physical. Like an animal has, right? But then he has something else also. He has a psychological also. Correct? The essence of the thing is a physical essence in man, there's a psychological essence in man, and then there's a ruchnius essence in man. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's not the same. It's closer. It's closer, but it's not the same. Now, the psychological part of man, the psyche of man, is closer to the ruchnius, but it's not the ruchnius itself. You understand what I mean? Okay. We went through that already. Now, when a person gets into the world of the psychological, he prefers psychological enjoyment to physical. Now, how he goes about it is he might go about it in a crazy way where he's going to distort himself or kill himself. It doesn't matter. But the point is he recognizes that the enjoyments of the psychological are far superior than the enjoyments of the physical.
Why?
You see, he does. Why? Because the truth of the matter is that it is so. It's a higher form of enjoyment. It's a greater form of enjoyment. You understand what I mean? Insofar as the realm of enjoyment is concerned, there's no doubt that the psychological is better. But if it's done properly, if it's done correctly, do you understand what I mean? However, if he distorts himself and drives himself crazy, naturally, in the long run, he's going to live a crazy life. But the psychological per se is better than the physical. It's a better form of enjoyment. Do you understand what I mean? Which is more the essence? I'll give you an example. You notice when people, if a person has a physical ailment, right? So many times a person has a physical ailment, they're ashamed to tell it. Ashamed to tell anybody, correct? Okay. If a person has a psychological ailment, many times they'll lie and they'll say it's physical. They'll say, why are we in the hospital? They'll give physical. Why? Why do they do that? Why? Greater shame. It's a greater shame. Why is it a greater shame? Why is it a greater shame?
Physical can happen to anybody. Psychologically, you're crazy.
But let me put it this way. The reason is because a person recognizes like this. He recognizes that his essence, the essence of man, you see, a person doesn't want to have a defect. A defect is something bad, right? But a person recognizes that the essence of man is more the psychological than the physical. Am I right in what I'm saying? You listen to what I'm saying? You understand what I mean? Yeah. In other words, you say, what is a person... You say, I am more the psychological being that I am than the physical. In other words, because he recognizes the physical isn't that important. The main thing in man is what? Now, if a person in other societies, a person like you have these societies where the main thing is physical, like the tribes, the primitive tribes, then the contrary, for them it would be worse to be physical, because the main thing is physical strength. You see? But a person who is intelligent, who knows, who has knowledge, a person knows that the main part of man is which? What's the main part? What's his main essence? What's his main essence? His main essence is the psychological essence. Not that. So if something's wrong with his psyche, that means he's crazy, like you said. What do you mean he? He, you mean it's more he. When you say he's crazy, it means this is more he than his body. His body's also he, right? But he recognizes that the body isn't as much he as what? As the psyche, right? Okay. So therefore, a person recognizes that which is more him, which is more his essence, the psyche or his body? Which is more his essence? His psyche, correct? Okay. Now, since that is so, that the psyche is more his essence than the body, so which enjoyment is more important? Or let's put it this way. Which part of him is better to be in better condition? The psyche, right? Therefore, which enjoyments must be greater for that individual? The psyche, because we define enjoyment as being what? Having the organism attain what it was created for. Now, if it's mainly a psyche, so which enjoyments are the greater? That's why when a person goes into the area of the psychological, he recognizes that this is more important, this is in greater enjoyment for him than what? Than the physical, correct? Okay. So therefore, he frowns upon the physical, because he recognizes less a part of him than that. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. Similarly, when a person goes to Olam Haba, what happens? When a person goes to Olam Haba, what happens? He recognizes then that what's his real essence? What's the real essence? Not the psyche, and not the physical. What is the real essence? The neshama itself. The real neshama. Okay, the neshama ruchnik, right? Therefore, he is what? Therefore, how does he look at the other enjoyments? Why does he look down on them? Because that's not... exactly right. Okay? That's the mashal. On the mashal, two things in the mashal Rambam. One, the Rambam shows you, because... you state that if a person isn't convinced about Olam Haba, the reason why he's not convinced is why? Because of the emotional state that he's in. Because the emotional state, not because rationally it doesn't exist. And if you want to take a look back, since he's captivated by his emotions, he can't believe about such a thing. He can't believe there's going to be another stage, right? So the Rambam shows you, but you already went through two stages. Just like you went through the other stage, that's right, exactly. So therefore, he wants to show you that your emotions, the emotional he gives you, is that your emotions should recognize Olam Haba. Yeah. You see, but he wants to give you a muscle so that you should be able to emotionally recognize Olam Haba. You understand what I mean? You should break that emotional barrier. So he's showing you how you can break that barrier. Because you already went through this. You see already that that's just an emotional barrier. He's showing you that it's just an emotional barrier. And the muscle is exactly diamond to the nimshah. Why? Because there's three stages. When a person goes, a person's young, his whole essence is physical. He gets older, he recognizes his essence psychological. And then the ultimate is the neshama itself. The real neshama. Got it? Yeah, now I'll move it. Okay, I just want to finish what we discussed by saying one thing. Namely, going back to our old definition. Our old definition was that happiness is when an object receives that which it was created for, right? Okay, therefore, the more perfect the object, the higher the form of the object, the greater the enjoyment. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay, the same thing over here. With the psyche and with the guf. The guf is a lower form, therefore, the pleasure of the guf is limited. The pleasure of the psyche. I mean the psyche is when it's doing what it's supposed to, namely learning Torah. Okay? That's why the pleasure that a person... give me an example. Let's give you an example. The pleasure... let me first finish. The pleasure that a person has at a learning Torah, if he lives properly and he learns Torah, that pleasure far exceeds the pleasure that a cow has by the... the pleasure that the cow has when he chews grass. Okay? You understand what I'm saying? All right? That's the thing. Yeah, the way the world is set up is absolutely wrong, because it's set up in a competitive way. The right way is that each guy should be learning just to gain the enjoyment that he gets out of learning. That's all he should be concerned about, not about the other guy, not about anybody else. That's the true. That's true there, Chaim. Unfortunately, the society killed it. Society killed it. Now we have a double problem. That's hard enough the way it is. Now you have to overcome the whole idea that society implanted in your mind all these years, namely that it's a competitive thing, and who's a better guy and who's a worse guy, which is all nonsense, because your reality is all you should be concerned with, not anybody else's, you see? And this nonsensical type of situation makes it 10 times harder. Now you have to overcome this crazy type of social setting which you've been placed into and which you have to fight against, you see? That's why a lot of people get very discouraged in learning. Why do they get discouraged? Because competitively they're not doing well. You understand? That's wrong. I mean, you should only be concerned about one thing, your enjoyment of learning, nothing else. That's the way a wise person looks at it. You see? A person, there are mathematicians and there are non-mathematicians. There are lawyers and there are non-lawyers. Doctors and people who aren't doctors, laymen. But there is no such thing as a person who is not a philosopher. There are only philosophers. good philosophers and bad philosophers. But non-philosophers don't exist. Why is that? Whatever you do, it's impossible for a person not to be a philosopher. If a guy goes to work every morning, then he must believe that going to work is good. Or if he thinks it's not good, then he must think doing something which you think is not good is good to do. I mean, whatever he does, it's impossible to get away from it. What if a person, as long as he lives, has to have a philosophy? If he commits suicide, he has to believe suicide is better to commit suicide. Whatever he does, there is no way out of it. That's why I say, and this is a funny thing, that in every area in life, if a person wants to become a doctor, so they prepare him to become a doctor, right? A lawyer, he has to go to school. But a philosopher, which everybody in the world is, there is no preparation for it, and it's just assumed that you're just going to come to you. You're going to come to the right ideas by yourself, which is absurd, because you have so many different ideas, they can all be right. So why isn't any attempt made to teach a person how to think? This is the art of life. The art of life itself is not taught. Everything else is taught. And the art of life is the only thing that everybody has to do. Everybody doesn't have to be a professional. Everybody doesn't have to be a businessman. But everybody has to live. That's the craziness of this world. But in Yahadus, that's why Yahadus is different. Yahadus, everybody, Talmud Torah is. Everybody's chayav. Why? Not because Talmud Torah is a profession, not because Talmud Torah is something against it. You have to live. V'chai bohem. You have to live. Everybody has to live. You have to have philosophy. Philosophy be the main thing. Why must it be the main thing? Why? It involves everything, correct. In other words, like this. Let's say, for instance, I'll give you an example. Let's say, for instance, a person wants to buy a car, right? So he wants to investigate into which car is the best car, right? But let's say he goes and does all the investigation into the car, but he doesn't investigate into whether he needs a car or not. Would that be a fool or not?
Yeah.
So the first thing you should investigate is to whether he needs a car, right? Okay. Now in life, when a person goes for a profession, this is what happens. He usually investigates into every profession to find out which is the best one, right? But he doesn't investigate into whether he needs these things, whether he needs the results of these things. No, he doesn't. But he doesn't investigate to see whether he really needs that money, how much money he needs, or if this is going to be good for him, or if the money might be harmful to him, or if the time might be better, might be spent better in other ways. We don't disagree that a person has to live, but the question is how he has to live. How? There are different levels of living. So the point is, let me ask you a question. Maybe they shouldn't. That's a good question. We have to analyze that. We have to analyze. We have to think about that. Isn't it a possibility?
No.
I think they'll have the greatest happiness. Absolutely nothing from the nonsense. You have to analyze whether you're better off that way, right? Oh, so you go into the particulars you go into, right? But to whether you need the whole business that you don't go into. Now, isn't that insanity? That's crazy. But that's the way they train you. That's the system. The last thing that a person has to know, this is what he has to know. He has to know, first of all, what the best life is, number one. Then he has to know himself. That's philosophy. Then he has to know psychology. He has to know himself. How much of it is he capable of living, right? And then, based upon those two, he has to be able to apply the philosophy to his own life, and then he'll be able to know what he needs. Then he can start choosing a profession which will suit that purpose. But the first thing is to know what the purpose is. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not saying in answer to the one, but that's not so easy to understand it and to really see it is a different thing. All right, I mean, just to a degree, understand it. But the point is, what Golombek mentioned was whether everybody should be everybody should learn all day. That's a separate question. Whether everybody's capable. But regardless, every individual should know what the true ideas are, know himself, and then know exactly how much to apply. That makes sense. But if he doesn't study the basics, it's like a person buying a tool, knowing what the tool is, not knowing whether he needs it or not. The first thing you have to find out is the use. And this is completely overlooked in today's education. A lot of things are overlooked in today's education. Another thing that's overlooked is logic and reasoning is overlooked. See, the ancients had a different approach. The ancients said like this, that in order for a person to know anything, so isn't it true, if a person, in order for him to study a science, that he has to know how to reason properly, right? But today you'll find people that are great lawyers, or great doctors, or great in any field, great historians, but they never learned how to think properly. Great psychologists, of course. How could a person be great in psychology if he doesn't know what thought is? The first thing would seem to be that you should perfect your thinking process. Then you could study any subject. But in this society, it's completely crazy. That's why the ancients had a better system than the modern people, and logicians recognize this. If you read books on logic, they say that in today's society is crazy. Because what you're doing is, you're taking a subject, you're taking a guy studying biology. Studying biology, right? But he doesn't know how to think yet. He doesn't know how can he study a subject? He doesn't know what thought is. See? That's why the Rambam says that even though, the Rambam says, why is it really all the Chachmas Hashem in the Bria? It's all Chachmas Hashem, physics and astronomy, everything is Chachmas Hashem. But the Rambam says the first thing is Tera. One of the reasons is, Rambam gives three reasons, but one of the reasons is because in Tera you get the best method of learning. That's one thing you get from Tera. Second thing is from Tera you get a philosophy of life, which should be before learning other sciences, because a person could be a mathematician, could be a mishugana, you see? If a person has a true Derech HaChayim, then he sees mathematics, then he sees physics, he really sees Chachmas Hashem from all these things. But first, he has to know how to think properly, he has to have a proper Derech HaChayim. If he doesn't have that, then he's a crazy man. If you read the lives of, there's a book out, E.T. Bell. He has the lives of all the different mathematicians, men of mathematics. You read some of the lives of these people, great minds, they live like nuts. They're crazy. So what good is it? What good does it do for his life? It has no value. See? You understand what I mean? If a person has the proper life, he knows how to live, then he could first, then he could appreciate, then he knows what to do with the knowledge. But if he just has the knowledge, he's a mishugana. It's crazy. Yesterday, in one word, was that in a person's life, what he usually does is he investigates the means very well, but he doesn't investigate the end. You understand? A job, a profession is a means, but he doesn't know what the end is. So he doesn't know what he needs. You understand what I mean? That's why it's foolish. You have to see first what you need in life. Then what the means, the profession is only means. Then which means will suit the goal. But if you don't know what the goal is, it's crazy. You understand? But that's the way average people live. Of course, Derech HaTorah is just the opposite. It really is. The whole build-up. Here's where it comes to what Olam Haba really is. Okay? An enjoyment that we have is a quantitative enjoyment. It exists in time. You can break it down into plots. There's a beginning of the enjoyment, and there's a middle, and then there's an end of it. Because it's subject to time. Over here, the enjoyment over there is the same thing. Over there, it's not shayach because inherently it's not subject to time. It's inherently eternal. Okay, that's the chiluk went through inherent eternity and accidental eternity. Right? Not one long. You can't call it long either. You see, long is a category of here. That's what he's saying. Right, inherently eternal. Out of absence. Most people, the fact they want to live, you see, is something which comes from the material substance, taiva. A person enjoys life. He's afraid of death. He wants to live. He's involved in taiva. It's simply a taiva. Now, when he hears about Tchias HaMeisim, he gets very excited. Why? Because here's a chance for him to fulfill his fantasy that he's going to live on forever. You see? So he ribs onto it, holds onto it very much. But the truth of the matter is, if he'd know what Tchias HaMeisim is according to Torah, he wouldn't even want it. He wouldn't even want it. Because according to the Rambam, first of all, the real life is only after death. Eternally, that's it. And even according to the Ramban, who says that this is Tchias HaMeisim and it goes on eternally, but according to the Ramban, there is the guf. In that state is completely different than the guf now. There's no achila, there's no shisiyah, there's a whole different thing. Like it's almost, that's the Rambam's kasha. That's the Rambam's kasha. Rambam's kasha is, how could you say that? That's why the Rambam rejects that possibility. Because the Rambam says, God does not have a malach saftola. Malach saftola calls it the mind of the malach saftola means malach for nothing. Something exists for nothing. Everything exists for a purpose. And you tell me that the guf exists, has no function. That's impossible. That's the Rambam says. The Ramban gives different answers for that. Don't ask me an answer. My point is, both of them agree. I mean, both agree, basically, in the concept. Because the Gemara says, Olam Habayim Balei Achila Velei Shisiyah Velei Tainug Velei Mishgal. Nothing. So the Olam Habayim, I understand, they both agree. If a person, whether it's in the guf, whether it's not in the guf, is not what this person's fantasy wants. The fantasy wants guf the way we have a guf. You understand what I mean? That's definitely out of the question, because that's some taiva, you see? But the question is really, the difference between Ramban and the Rambam is very small. It's a small difference. No, that's the only thing. Rambam, according to the Rambam, the Tchias and Mason. He doesn't know. Rambam says you don't know what Tchias and Mason is. Before Mashiach or after Mashiach. We don't know. What? They'll all die. They'll all die again because the perfect state is death. The perfect state of man is death. That's the perfect state. Because then it's all... What? Right. According to the Rambam, Olam Haba is where? After he's dead. According to the Ramban, Olam Haba is on this world after Tchias and Mason. The term Olam Haba means, I want you to understand, the Machlokes is, what does Olam Haba mean? Give me another word. It's not a question here, there. I mean, it's not a matter of, what do you call it, semantics over here. What does the word Olam Haba mean? Give me a translation of Olam Haba. What does Olam Haba mean? Olam Haba means the ultimate good for man. That's what it means. That's what it means. Olam Haba means the ultimate good. Now, the Machlokes in the Ramban and the Rambam is, what is that ultimate good? You understand? It's not a question of terminology here. According to the Rambam, the ultimate good is only Lachamisa. According to the Ramban, the ultimate good is on this world, after Tchias HaMesim, when the actions of the body will be nullified.
Okay.
It's simply a reunion of the guf and the neshama.
So
a temporary reunion. That's all. Just like the first one took place, second one takes place. Outside, not subject to the physical properties of time and space. That's what we mean, right?
So even
now, once the neshama, you understand, once the neshama is unified, is attached to the guf, so then it becomes inhibited. Then it becomes inhibited. Then it's subject again, right, to an extent. According to Ramban, it'll be accidental infinity. According to Ramban, it's inherent infinity. That's the difference. Because according to Ramban, you'll exist forever and ever. Okay. Let me just review once more. We're saying there's two types of existence. There's inherent eternal existence, and then there is accidental. Right? The marshal you have from sight, color is inherently sound, you can't hear it, and in low voice is not inherently, it's accidentally, it's just not the right quantity of sound there to hear it, but it's not inherently inaudible. That type of vibration is subject to hearing, to audibility. The only thing is that it's not loud enough, it's missing quality, missing quantity. Whereas color inherently is not shy to hear. Okay, you understand that? Same thing over here. When we say that a thing exists in time, there's two possibilities. It exists in time, meaning existing forever. It's 100 years, never. The other way is that what? It's not subject to time altogether. The whole category of time, the property of time, doesn't apply to it. After death, the property of time does not apply to a person's soul. It's beyond the property. It has nothing to do with it. It's unrelated. Now, what happens at Tchias HaMesim? At Tchias HaMesim, there's a union between, a relationship between this thing and the physical. It would be like taking an idea and relating it to a physical entity. If you would relate it, so insofar as it's related to the physical entity, and the physical entity is subject to time, it too is subject to time via its relationship. That's the same thing with our neshama in this world. Our neshama in this world inherently is not related to time, but insofar as it's related to a physical body, so it is, because of its relationship, subject to time, but not because of its nature. You understand what I mean? The difference between something being so because of its nature or because of its relationship. That's the caregiver of Shirin Purim. The night of Purim. Night of Purim has certain halachas. Why? Because of its relationship to the day. The day of Purim, not because of relationship, inherently. It has a certain chiyuv. Well, a practical example. Concrete example? Okay, concrete example. Concrete example is as follows. A person now, in this world, a person's soul can only function through the senses. Right? Okay, now the senses are physical things. Physical things are your time. So therefore, I cannot have 15, I have to spend time. It takes a certain amount of time to see this object. Right? And then once I see the object, then the soul could start thinking about it, right? But I have to go through, it'll take me 2 days, 5 days. It's limited to time. Whereas if the soul wasn't unified with the body, wasn't related to the body, then it wouldn't need this thing. So it wouldn't be subject to time altogether. Okay? Oh, the soul, the basic proof of the soul, quickly just to review it, yeah? Oh, it's the kasha. They say like this. It's kasha in the Rambam. The Rambam says that there can't be, Gehenna cannot be on this world. The Rambam says that. He says, why? He says, because how can you say the soul is? Because some want to say that, because Chazal say that Gehenna is under this earth. Chazal like that. So Ram says, of course, they didn't mean it literally. He says, it can't be literal. Why can't it be literal? Because he says, how can you take the soul and put it in the earth? He says, the soul is not subject to the physical. You can't say it's here, you can't say it's there, right? So somebody asked a very good kasha. They said, how can the soul be in a body? How can the soul be in a body during a person's lifetime? The relationship. Alright. The answer is, the relationship is not a space relationship. You see, it's not the shot. The soul is attached to this guy. The soul, he has a little soul attached to him over there, floating around. It's a functional relationship. It's a functional relationship, which means that the soul can't function without this body. You see, that's all. Think about it. I'll put it this way: the soul functions through the body. If you want it that way, is better. Just staying with it. The soul will go over very quickly. Things like this. That the soul, the proof that the soul exists forever. Okay? If I get some insight into the fact that the soul is eternal in the following way. Alright? Thing is this, that when a person contemplates the universe, when he understands Chokhmas Hashem, so through contemplation he finds that there are certain principles and certain laws, rules in which the universe operates. It doesn't operate haphazardly, right? Okay? It doesn't operate haphazardly. Chukai Shemayim Vart. Navi always talks about Chukai Mishpat, Nasam Lam, possibly the brach of, what do you call it, of Kiddush Levana, which goes in the whole system, not just Levan. So there are certain laws in nature, certain laws implanted in nature. Now, these laws, you see, there's one of two possibilities. Either these laws really exist, and man perceives them, you understand? Or man makes them up, and they don't exist. There's no such thing as law. Yeah, the idea is the universe. There's no such thing as the ideas of the universe. It's you're putting, there's really phenomena out there, and you're putting it into a certain order. You see? That's a big argument among the physicists. Philosophical physicists, okay? Now, the big question is, if they don't exist, so it means it's haphazard phenomena, how come it always lends itself to the human ideas? Because the human being has certain basic ideas. And all of physics, all of knowledge of the universe really boils down to certain principles that man works with, certain ideas. You can never get new ideas because you're only a human being, and that's it. The human mind has a certain amount of ideas. But everything always, whatever we study, seems to conform to these ideas. Now, it would be odd indeed to say it's just an accident that it happens to conform. That's why, that's the argument which maintains, therefore, that there are really ideas out there. But a human mind perceives these ideas. Okay? All right. Now, the ideas existing, right? You understand very well those ideas are eternal. They're not subject to time, right? You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. There you understand. Now, if man was only physical and there was nothing else but the physical in man, then man would not be able to perceive the ideas. Why?
At all.
Because something which perceives something else has to be akin to its nature, has to have the same nature. You see? If the hand can perceive matter, then they both must be physical. If they're not one spiritual, one's physical, can't perceive it. Right? So therefore, there must be something inside of you, something in there, which perceives an eternal thing, right? That thing is eternal. Spiritual means it's not subject to time, so therefore it's eternal. That's the mention, good point. That this proof of evolution. In other words, of course, if there's evolution is from a physical state, right? Now, so this is something that's, yeah, eternal is a separate category. A lot of questions now. I mean, one day I'll go through with you what it is all about. And we will not find a mashal to explain this enjoyment. You see? Why? I know. So take a look at the pasuk. Beautiful pasuk. Kishaniflu beinav gedula satovahu myloso omar morav tu vashetzafanta li reyecha. You understand? This is a beautiful expression, the pasuk. Yumiyah, I think it is. It means, that's right. That's the expression of Olam Haba. You can only say one thing. Wow, how great. You can't equate it to anything. You understand what I'm saying? Can't be compared. That's the pasuk. More after, how great. That's it. You can't describe it. Nothing physical. No physical enjoyments in Olam Haba. Allah, that's the negative description. What it doesn't have there. Now it has a positive. Elo tzadikim yeshivim va'atreseihem b'rosheihem v'nehenem miziv ha'shchina. That's what it says. Alright? Okay, what does that mean? That's the question. What does it mean? Tzadikim yeshivim rotze lomar ba'omro. What it means is like this. Ba'omro, when it says this, it means v'atreseihem b'rosheihem. When they say v'atreseihem b'rosheihem, they mean hash'oras ha'nefesh, the remaining existence of the soul, b'kiyum ha'muska lahem, with the existence of the knowledge that they have, with the existence of that which they understand, v'hu ha'bara yisbarach, and this is God, v'ayos hu, I'm just translating, v'ayos hu wrote to Lomer, and that he, I mean to say ha'muska, that which is understood, v'hu, and he himself, dover echad, one, k'mo she'zachru gedolei ha'filosofim, b'durochim ye'orech bi'uram b'kan. Just like the philosophers explained it at length, but too lengthy to put in this writing. That's what the Rambam says. Yeah, but you have to understand what he means. All right, what does it mean? Here is saying a very deep idea, which is known as Achdus Hamaskil Vamuskal. Achdus Hamaskil Vamuskal. It means the oneness of the perceiver and the thing perceived. Okay? The oneness of the perceiver and the thing perceived. That is a philosophical formulation. And the Rambam means that over here. You see, if you take a look at what he says, you'll see. Take a look. What does he say? He says like this. The thing is that Aristotle's concept the philosopher's concept of Olam Haba was correct. They really arrived at the truth through intellectual reasoning, see? And this is the basic idea of how it works over there. Even they knew it, who didn't have any Masara of Olam Haba. Because the philosophers also maintained that the soul cannot die, but the soul exists after death, just from logical proofs, see? Yeah. Okay. Now the Rambam says this is the way it works. All right, I'll tell you, we're going to have to digress now to the Maran Avochim, okay? All right. It's in the Maran Avochim Simen Samaches Per Echelak Aleph. Okay. He says it is known already that which the philosophers say about God, Vehu Amro, and they say like this, Shehu Asechel, he is the. The Rambam says that you will never find in the Torah, and as I show you, so you talk about philosophy. Philosophy is in the Torah. The Rambam brings it right. You'll never find in the Torah anywheres where it will say Chei Hashem. Never. Chei. It'll always say Chai Hashem. Never Chei Hashem. All right. But by Paro it'll say Chei Paro. Chei Paro and Teitzu Mizek. Ki Yim Bevoy Achichem Akot Nehena. Pasuk in Bereishis. Right in the case. Okay. All right. What's the difference? Chei and Chai. Chai Hashem Ubaruch Tzuri, not Chei Hashem. Chei Hashem means, Chei Hashem would mean, if there would be such a thing, would mean the life of God. Chei Paro, by the life of Paro, you're not going to get out of here. What does it mean? He's swearing by the life of Paro. But it means that there is Paro, and Paro has a life. So there's the entity of Paro, because life, an animal has life also. But there's two things. There's Paro, the essence of Paro, and that essence of Paro has a life to it also. You see? His life that he has is no different than the life that an animal has. But the Paro is different, right? So there's Paro, the essence of Paro, and then there's the life of Paro, right? God, we will never say Chei Hashem. Chai Hashem. Why not Chei Hashem? Because you can't say what? That's right. You can't say God has a life. Because there isn't God and essence of God and then the fact that he has life also. But then it would be duplicity. That's right. There's no plurality. Then it would be plurality. But God is one, there's no part. That's why in Tanakh you'll never find Chai Hashem. Only what? Chai Hashem. Chai Hashem means God lives. That's what Chai Hashem. Hashem Chai. Hashem Chai. That's what it means. Chai Hashem, but never Chai Hashem. Okay? That's what the Rambam says. Why the Rambam says, why is this so? Why the Pesukim worked out that way? Why? He says, because his life is nothing extraneous to himself. When we explained why you can never have any attributes of God, Rambam explains the inadmissibility of attributes in relationship to God. So that's why you once you're going to have attributes, you're going to say what? That you're going to say there's plurality. That's what I want you to know. I mean, that's when a person, a lot of people, even though they have firm intentions, but when they mispalel, if they think Hashem, Hashem kiel rachum v'chanon, and they imagine that God has an emotion of rachmanis, this is really, this is a denial of the pinas, what does Rambam call this? Pinas dasenu. It's a denial of the cornerstone of Adas. Because the cornerstone of Adas is that what? That Hashem echod. God is one. Hashem, Hashem kiel rachum v'chanon only means one thing.
His actions.
He does not have any attribute of, or any emotion or any feeling of sympathy or compassion. No. It means that an action. Two separate things. Midas din yachnas. That's right. It can't be two. It's not two. Can't be. No. It can't be two midas in God. Midas ad-din and midas ar-rachmim are only in the actions, not in God Himself. Okay?
Right,
in the actions, in the results. Not in the God. Like, for instance, the Rambam gives a good example. He says, fire does many things. Fire blackens. Fire whitens. Fire makes things hard. Fire makes things soft. Right? Okay? All right. Fire makes things hot. It makes things cold. The refrigerator runs under the gas, right? Okay. So you see, it's the same thing. It's not a different thing, but the results are different. That's the same thing in relationship to God. God's nature is one, but there are many things result from that. Some action, the actions that result, one would call rachon, you see? But it's not like a person's rachon that comes from emotion. By God, it comes from his essence. By God, it comes from his essence, not from an emotion. By human being, when a human being is a marachon, we don't know. God's essence is beyond definition. That's the obvious. What's the difference between eternal, two different types of eternity?
Oh, one from the
beginning and correct, correct, correct.
Like a lion,
yeah,
and a ray,
right,
and a
lion. Right, right, right. In other words, we're... When we say that, when we say, for instance, that the that a person is what do you call it is a, that a person the Shem will exist forever. It doesn't mean live eternity. Eternity of God means that what? What eternity of God? That there's no beginning. It means that. What does it mean? There's no beginning. That his nature is existence. That's what it means. His nature is existence. That's why you can't ask who created God. A lot of people who consider themselves great philosophers don't know the answer to that simple question. Who created God? I went through that every once. Did I go through that?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Simple one. Can't ask the question. That's the definition. The logic dictates that when a person goes back into causality, there has to be something whose nature is existence. And then you can't ask why does that exist, because that's its nature. Okay. All right, so you guys are educated, right? Yes. There's two types. One type is by God, his nature is existence. That's part of, you can't ask why he exists because his nature is existence. You understand? By the soul, the nature is an existence because there was a time when there was, using the word time now, not the same way as the old word, but there was, before it was created, there was a before it was created. You understand? With God, you can't say before he was created. You understand? Okay. Now, but with the soul, the reason why it's eternal is because once it is created, you understand, it's not subject to the to the destructive forces of time. But that doesn't mean that inherently it's nature's existence. That's something else. That's right. That's right. You understand what I mean? But its inherent nature is not existence. But it
what? Inherent
nature is not. That's right. That's right. But it has to be created. That's right. Correct. You see it? One is its inherent nature's existence per se. If that's the case, then it has to always exist. That's eternal from backwards to forward all the way through. That was the description gave before, you understand? But the second one, the pshat is that that its nature is not existence. You understand what I mean? But, however, what? The way it exists now, is not subject to the destructive force of the time. It's Bereshis Bara Lakim. You know what Rambam says Bereshis Bara Lakim means? It means bir over here. He calls it beza kaila. It means with. Sometimes bir means with. Sometimes bir means in. It's not in the beginning. According to the Rambam, it's with the beginning. With the beginning, with time. Beginning means beginning of time. With the beginning was the creation of Shemayim Varetz. So the Rambam says it means, what the Torah means is that you can't have time if you don't have matter, because time is an accident of matter. This is corroborated. As a matter of fact, that one time asked Einstein when he first came from Europe. So he asked him, could you summarize your theory for the layman in two words? So he said, I'll tell you what it is. He says, before I came along, he says, people thought that if you destroy matter, there still would be time and space. So that I was able to show that there is no such thing as time and space if there is no matter. That it's dependent on that.
Depends on matter, right?
That's basically the Rambam's interpretation of Bereshis Bara. Same exact thing. That's what the Rambam said. Is that with Bereshis, with the beginning of time, was the creation of Shemayim Varetz, was the creation of matter. Because time is an accident in matter. If you don't have matter, you don't have time. Amazing, I understand what he's saying. You have to understand. You see, the problem why you don't understand it is because you don't understand what potential is. Alright? Even though you study about potential energy and kinetic energy. The thing is like this. There are two types of changes in an object. Let's say, for instance, you take a seed and you plant it. The seed becomes a tree. That's one kind of change, right? Another kind of change is a person takes wood and builds a table. So before it was wood, now it's a table, right? That's another kind of change. Two different kinds of changes. How are they different? In the seed, you see, there's nothing that has effectuated a change in the seed. All you did is you placed the seed in the ground and it grew. Right? When you made a table, you effectuated a change. Actually, before it was a lump of wood, now you effectuated a change and you made it into a table. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, both. What's the difference between the two?
One's nature, one's you.
So you'll tell me like this. What? No. But you'll tell me, you see, you'll tell me like this. You'll say, in one case, the ground caused it, or the water in the ground caused the seed to grow, right? Just like the carpenter built the table, right? I say, no, it's different. What's the difference? What's the difference? You see, the water in the ground doesn't cause the seed to grow like a carpenter creates a table. When a carpenter creates a table, he's responsible for the entire table. With the water, just gives it, is only a condition under which the seed can realize its potential. But the potential is in the seed itself. You understand that? What I'm saying is the water to the seed is not to be equated to the carpenter to the table. The carpenter is really the cause of the table. He caused the table to exist. The water doesn't cause the tree. The water is a condition under which the seed can fulfill its potential. A seed is a potential tree. Do you understand that? Okay. You understand that?
Without the water, without the carpenter, without the
wood. Well, potential in the wood. There's no potential in the wood for a table. The wood can't do it itself. That's not potential. You understand what I mean? Potential means when the thing itself, inherent in the thing itself, you understand, without an extraneous cause, it changes. In other words, potential means...
And the wood has no potential.
The wood, no, the wood has no potential for a table. It's man who took the wood and he changed it into a table.
Carpenter.
Yeah, the carpenter. But the seed, it's not the water didn't create a tree. The water is just the condition. What created the tree? That all that power that was in that tree was in where? In the seed. You understand? Now that power is called a potential. So a seed is a potential tree. There's a certain amount of energy in there. I think this is going to be energy, but it's something in there. There's something in there that will cause it to cause the tree to emerge. That's why seeds are very healthy, by the way, because yeah, that's right. Because it has the strength of the plant is in the seed. You see? Because that's the whole potential. Okay. Yeah. It's not inherent. It's not inherent in the thing. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. It's not inherent in the thing. Right. Now the question is like this. Now here's the question. The question is, when the mind perceives something, right, there are two possible ways to understand it. What are the two possible ways to understand it? Two possible theoretical ways of construing the mind understanding something. What are the two possible ways? This is a sharp point. One way is the way most people think, that the mind takes the object and it hammers out an idea from the object. See? If that's the case, would it be equated to the table or to the tree? To the table, right? Ram says that's false. That's not true. That's not true. The mind is like the seed, and the things that you see are like the water. And then what happens is that the mind comes into... Then the mind perceives. Do you understand what I'm saying? The mind starts changing. When the senses see an idea, see a physical thing, that awakens the mind. That's like the water. And now the mind starts going into abstract thought, and then it perceives. Then it reaches its fulfillment when it gets to the height of abstraction. You understand what I'm saying? See, perceive is not a good word. Because perceive, see, with the eye, for instance, it doesn't work that way. With the eye, it doesn't work that way.
It's not there, now you see it, now you...
Correct. You're right. The eye doesn't reach its potential when you have something that it sees. The thing activates the mind. The eye is acting. You understand? There's a difference between an eye that has... What is an eye? How does the eye work? We know now more scientifically how it works. The light is transmitted from there into through the cornea, right? Okay, then it goes into the background, which it's a reflector, right? Now there's a difference between the eye when there's a reflection there and us. But the eye isn't going from potential to actual. The eye remains the same. That's not the same with the mind. The mind doesn't work that way. The mind undergoes changes, you see? And all these things, seeing the different things, cause it to change from its potential state to its actual state.
It makes the thing.
Yeah. The only thing, I'll give you an example. Let's say if there isn't... All right, once again. Didn't I explain to you already last time we went through the image and the abstract concept?
Yeah.
Can we go through that?
Yeah.
Okay. So you saw very clearly that really when people think that they have an idea of man, they think that it's that image of man they have. It's not the image, because the image can only be one thing. It can be fat or it can be skinny. It can be tall or short, and yet you'll apply it to everything. So there's something beyond the image. You understand what I mean? Okay. Now when you see the image, it activates that thing beyond the image. That thing beyond the image didn't get it from the external world. That thing beyond the image is mind. You understand what I mean? So the only thing is that when you see the image, it activates it and it causes it to start working. But it's not taking something from the outside. That's the inherent. That's inside. That's the thing in there. You understand what I mean?
No. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but it changes. It undergoes a change before the... In other words, the thing fulfills its potential. That thing in back over there, when it sees the image of man, right? Now, what it happens is it undergoes a change. It's not a new thing, because from the physical world, it didn't get itself. It didn't get this thing. All you saw in the physical world was forms. That's all you saw. Now, how do you go beyond that? You can't go beyond that unless you have something else, right? Now, that something else that goes beyond that didn't get anything from the outside. That works on its own principles. The only thing the forms did was it activated that thing now to operate, to perceive, to think, to feel. So the form is like the water, of course. Without the water, the seed can't grow either. Do you understand what I'm saying? You see it?
What's the idea? Oh, right.
Oh, so the flint and the fork.
Right.
The